In the mid-50s, two men knocked over a kerosene stove during a fight at a concert. After fleeing the blaze, the guitar player realized he left his beloved Gibson inside. B.B. King then ran in and saved it. He later learned that the fight was over a woman named Lucille, and ever since, his guitars have borne that name. You can find Lucille at the Hard Rock in Hollywood, Florida. Thousands of other priceless pieces of rock history can be found at Hard Rock cafes, casinos, and hotels around the world. To learn more, visit hardrock.com.
Stephen's Underground Garage's coolest conversations, presented by Hard Rock Cafe, hosted by the Mighty Manfred.
This is the Mighty Manfred, and it's time for your coolest conversations podcast here in Little Stephen's Underground Garage, presented by Hard Rock. Thanks for listening, and please remember to follow, subscribe, rate, and review. I'm joined this go-round by famed guitarist Tony Valentino. He played on all the recordings from the seminal 60s garage rock band The Standells, including coming up with the iconic riff to their big hit, Dirty Water. We'll hear some of that classic now, and then I'll be back with Tony Valentino for your coolest conversations presented by Hard Rock and Little Stephen's Underground Garage.
I'm gonna tell you a story.
You got the Mighty Manfred with you in Little Stephen's Underground Garage, and I have a very special Coolest Conversations lined up for us today. My guest is famed guitarist Tony Valentino, best known as a guitar player in the Standells. He plays on all their seminal songs and is also responsible for that distinctive guitar riff on the hit tune Dirty Water. How are you, Tony?
Great. Good morning. I'm trying to wake up here.
Yeah, you're pretty much living the rock and roll lifestyle, right?
Yeah,
you were
sure.
Up pretty late last night working on some recordings.
Yeah, no, we were rehearsing for the show coming up on the 21st in Newport Beach for Poor Man. He does this show every year. So he says, oh, it's going to be about 1,000 people. It's a huge, huge place, a golf course and a restaurant and a stage. So it's going to be wild. I'm looking forward to that.
Yeah, the night is, you said, what day was that, the 21st? The Newport Beach?
Of December, yeah, Thursday night.
Right, wow. And what's the name of the venue, the restaurant?
Original Pizza, I think.
Yeah, and are you playing, you're playing Standell stuff? Or what
yeah, is... I'm going to be doing all my recording from the Standells. Maybe a couple of new ones. We'll see.
And that sounds really cool, and we're going to talk about that the new album, the new recordings in a moment here, new album on Big Star Records called Dirty Water Revisited. But first, I'd like to get some background on you, because, well, in fact, starting where you were born, were you born in Italy?
I was born in Sicily, up in the mountains, and it was pretty crazy. I wanted to come to America always, you know, was trying to reach... via ham radio up in the mountains, you know, was trying to get stations from England that I would listen like to Elvis or American artist Chuck Berry and I go, oh my God, I gotta go to America. When I heard that solo on Rockin' Round the Clock, mm-hmm. I flipped out. I go, oh my God, I got to go to to Hollywood because in Italy we have a different kind of music. I was playing guitar a little bit in the piazza, you know, with all the guys at night, and the summer would sit at the steps and 7, 8 people, and so I learned a couple of chords. So I was really anxious to. My goal was to really come to America.
Well, coming to America, but so you already had family over here, or
yeah, my mom was here in Cleveland with my grandparents, and then they got deported to Sicily. I don't know, my grandfather, something happened, but it's kind of secret. So he got deported to Sicily, and then so I heard about America, and my mom used to speak English sometimes. And I go, wow, that's pretty wild. And I go, where is this Hollywood? And, you know, looking at magazines and movies. You know, when I saw that movie with James Dean, Rebel Without Cause, that was it. I go, oh, my God, I got to go to America. You know.
So how did you do that? I mean, did you, when you moved to America, well, what year was it when you got here to the States?
Like, I got here in 69. 59? Yeah, 59, exactly, sorry.
Yeah, 59. So yeah. Did you come with your family then, or you just came by yourself?
My whole family, we went to Cleveland because mm-hmm. my grandparents were there. And luckily, my Uncle Nick and my aunt, they were here in California. And when I got there, I thought I was in California, and I kept telling them, I go, where is, I got to go to, where's the Hollywood? I thought it was like 10 miles away. I had no idea that you have to take a 3-day train to come to Hollywood.
Yeah.
So when I got over there in Cleveland, and my grandmother put me on the train, I couldn't speak English. And took 3 days to get to Hollywood. And it was crazy because I couldn't speak English. And I'll never forget this. I was sitting in this wagon and it was full. And all of a sudden, about a couple hours down the road, everybody disappeared and I couldn't figure out why. And then the guy, the black waiter, he was pointing to my bag and my grandmother, you know, the old style Sicilian, she packed some anchovies and some cheese, and I'm smelling so bad. That's what happened as everybody left the wagon. So that's what happened.
So you didn't speak any English. You obviously had to learn that pretty quick. You get out to Los Angeles, and then you were able to stay with your relatives?
Yeah, I was staying with my brothers and sister with my uncle. And then he took, one day I wrote this song, a kind of Italian song for Dean Martin. And we went to Capitol Records. He took me to Capitol Records. And we walked in there and we were trying, I couldn't speak English. And there was a couple of guards and the receptionist girl. And the only word I could understand was manager, manager. And all of a sudden, there's two guys, they escorted us out and they threw us out of Capitol. And then the funniest thing is that about 3 years later, I met Dino Martin and the whole gang.
Yeah.
And I was hanging out at his house in Beverly Hills. I met Dean Martin. I couldn't believe I was telling the story. And then 3 years later, again, we were back to Capitol signing a contract. That was like incredible. It was like a dream come true.
Well, I want to ask you about the the Capitol and Tower Records stuff. You mentioned playing guitar when you were in Italy. How old were you when you started playing guitar?
Maybe about 16.
Mm-hmm. And when you were playing guitar, were you starting? Did you start on an acoustic guitar, or were you playing electric?
Yeah, acoustic guitar. My uncle built it for me. There was no shop. I mean, my town is only like 2,000 people, and we had no electricity until 1957. So it was a trip. I grew up like in a farm with the cows, go, you know, we used to, live off the land, you know,
Yeah.
in the farm. That was incredible.
Well, when you got out to LA, and you've got your relatives there, you're staying with them. Did you take a day job, or did you try to go to school, or were you
Yeah,
trying to start the
he took me to this he took me to this a famous restaurant. Italian restaurant was called Sarno's in Vermont, and it's still there actually. It's like a, you know, everybody used to go there, all the movie stars. And so I got a job there. I was like a bus boy. I used to clean up the floors and the bathrooms, you know, the kitchen. I was just, doing odds, all kinds of jobs. Then a friend of mine, and the first time she paid me, I never forget, she paid me with $40, all $1 bills. I've never seen so much money in my life. You know, I went home, my pocket was completely full of $1 bills, and I was so excited. I go, oh my God, I got $40. And so then my friend that used to work with me, he goes, I can get you a better job at this bakery. So he recommended me to go there. My uncle takes me there. And the manager, you know, he keeps saying again, well, I don't know if we can hire him. He doesn't understand. And then he kind of said, I don't know. He's got to go to school, this and that. And but I keep calling this guy. Like I was saying, oh, I'm sorry. I thought somebody called me. Was it you to come to work? So I called him about four times, you know, through weeks, and then he goes, okay, come over. I'll give you a job. So I
Good,
went
good.
over there. That's how I started. Now I was they putting me in the conveyor belt where all the pastry come down. You have to pick them up like Lucille Ball, you know.
Yes, I was thinking of that
The
famous
first night,
Lucille
it was
Ball
just
scene.
like Lucille Ball. It was like a disaster, you know. I had packages going all over the place on my feet. I was trying to get them under my arms. And oh my God, it was just, when I saw that episode with Lucille Ball, I could not believe it.
Oh man.
So
So you come over and you get some sort of day jobs. Did you when did you start finding other musicians to play with? And did you play with the bands before the
No,
standouts?
so what happened is, after I was in many camps, I was allergic to flour. So I requested to go into the oven department where they bake the bread. So I changed the department. And when I got there, I met this guy named Jody Rich. And he goes, I play bass. And I go, hey, I play guitar, you know. And he goes, let's start a band. So that was the start. So we started this band called the Starlighters, which we went on to record. We met this guy named Lenny Duncan, lead singer, and we did some gigs under the Starlighters. And he had a song called Delayed Action, but it was not finished, an instrumental. And I keep playing and I'm playing. And then one day I put the bridge on the song. And then one night we went to the football game in Burbank, and they were clapping their hands. They were going, let's go, down, down, down. So on the way out, I told the guys, let's call the song Let's Go instead of Delayed Action. So we went home and rehearsed it, and we all paid $5 each, and we went to record the song at the studio in Glendale. And then Warner Brothers picked it up and was called Let's Go, you know, that famous song. Then,
Right, the routers. They use that as the intro for my show.
yeah, Let's Go.
Yeah,
Yeah, that
dun
was
dun
me.
dun 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 dun.
Yeah.
Let's go. Yeah,
Yeah.
that's
And
it.
me and Jody Rich, we started that. And then Lenny Duncan disappeared. And so me and Jody, we were looking for different members. And then from the Starlighters, we met this other guy. And the manager says, you guys got to change the name. And then we changed the name from the Starlighters to the Standales. So me and Jody Rich, we went from there, from the Starlighters, we went and started the Standales.
Well, like the Standell, so this the story I've heard that Larry Tamblyn came up with that Standell thing because you guys are spending a lot of time standing around in booking agents' offices. Is that
well,
true?
That's what he said. It is kind of true. We went, our booking agent, McConkie, sent us around the corner on Wilcox. He says, you guys got to come up with a name. And we were standing around every day. And then the first name that came up was Standell, like Standell Amplifier.
Oh, okay.
And so it was after that. And so because of we were afraid of getting sued from the Standell amp, we added one L.
Okay.
And two L's and an S. So we called the Standells. And then because we were standing around for 3 days to come up with a name, and that's how the name came up. But we all three came up with a name.
Tell me about Standell amps. Were they any good?
Standell, yeah, that was pretty good. Not bad.
Well, they should have been your sponsors, you know?
Yeah, they didn't. That's incredible.
Well, let me ask you about this. The drummer, Gary, I think it's Gary Leeds. Gary Leeds, he would be the drummer in the Walker Brothers, but he was playing with you guys before Dick Dodd, right?
What a funny guy. We had so much fun with Gary Leeds. Then one day in 63, first we went to Hawaii, our first gig with the Standell, me and Jody and Larry. Jody was the leader. And when we got there, we were supposed to stay 6 weeks. We ended up staying 6 months. And Jody was really strict. He was in the army. He mm-hmm. used to make us, you know, spit our shoes, clean, and rehearse. You know, he was really tough. But then after a while, we came back. He kind of disappeared. And me and Larry continued with mm-hmm. the Standells. And we found Gary Leeds and Gary Lane, the bass player. And we continue as the Standells. And we went to a court here in Van Nuys, and we registered the name on the, you know, the Standells with two L's.
Right.
So it's my name. I still got the newspaper clip. It says my name and Larry's name and Jody's name.
So what year did the band actually start then?
Let's go. The Salars in late 61, and mm-hmm. the Standells was in 62.
Okay. So eventually Gary leaves, and then you wind up scoring a Dick Dodd, the former master.
Right.
How did you wind up with Dick Dodd?
We were playing at PJ's and famous club here in Hollywood. And Gary came up to me one day. He goes, hey, Tony, you want to go to England? I want to go there and make it big over there, and we could form a band. I go, I don't know if I want to go to England. I just came here from Italy. Yeah. I don't know if I want to go back to Europe. So I did not go. So he went there, and he became very successful. He became, you know, he hung out with the Beatles and so on.
Right. I mean, he was in the Walker Brothers, right?
Yeah, from the Walker Brothers.
Yeah.
With John. And John and Judy, they were a duo. They used to play around town here in clubs. We used to play in different clubs, the same clubs, like we used to take turns. So he went there as John. It was John and Judy, but he went there as John, and then he changed the name. There was another guy called PJ Proby. That was crazy that it became a big phenomenon.
PJ Proby, yeah.
Yeah.
Looked and sounded kind of like Elvis. Yeah, he did that Elvis too.
So at PJ's, we were playing there. And so Gary quits, and we're looking for a drummer. And somebody recommended Jackie DeShannon. She used to come to the club and used to know Dick Dodd. I guess he did some session for her.
Mm-hmm.
And so she recommended Dick Dodd to us. And he came over at the PJ's. He did the audition, and that was it. And we hired him right there on the spot.
Very cool. I think he'd also played in the surf bands.
He used to play around in Orange County. Yeah. Surfing, I can't remember the name.
I was going to guess the Bel Airs, but I'm not certain.
All right, great. You got it.
Yeah. Well, before you guys got signed to Tower Records, I mean, you mentioned PJ's being a famous club. You did a, I guess, a set there live thing that Liberty
I
Records
love
put out
PJs,
as
yeah.
an album, and then there were singles with VJ, I think maybe MGM. So you
Right.
guys are you're active. You're gigging around town. You've even put out an album. Had a couple of singles. What got you on to Tower Records, on to Capitol
Well, we
Records?
met our manager at this club. It was called the Peppermint West on Cahuenga. It was another famous club. All the movie stars used to come there. And as a matter of fact, one night Johnny Cash walked in, and the owner came up on stage. He goes, "Hey, you guys, I got Johnny Cash in the audience. He wants to come up and do a song." I go, "Oh my God, Johnny Cash!" I was flipping out. Here
Yeah.
comes Johnny Cash with his guitar, you know,
Yeah.
and he came up and did a song. And I never forget. He goes, "Tony D, D as in dog," you know. He gave me the name. That was so awesome. And we met our manager, Bert Jacobs. From there, he signed us with a, like, first we signed with Liberty Records.
Right.
We did a live at PJ's, and nothing really happened. And then from there, we signed with the VJ Records. And you got to listen to this. So we were in there signing with the VJ Records. The president behind the desk, and he goes to us, "I want you guys to know that I'm signing you guys, the Standells, and I'm letting these four guys off the contract from England." I go, "What was that?" He goes, "I won't tell you." On the way out, the secretary goes, "That was the Beatles." Can
Yeah,
you believe
wow.
that? So
Yeah,
he let the
wow.
Beatles go to sign the Standells. And then, it was pretty wild. I'll never forget that. And the Beatles, I mean, he let the Beatles go. They were like incredible. They had "Love Me Do." They had all this already. "I Want to Hold Your Hand."
Right, and you what later when you guys are on while you were on the Munsters TV show as the Standells, and you
Right.
played what did you play? You played I Want to Hold Your Hand.
Yeah, they wanna. So originally they wanted the Beatles, but they turned it down. So our manager, Simbo Heller, was managing Liberace, the other manager of the production company, and so they got us a gig, you know, to do some movies. Even we did the Ride at Sunset Strip for MGM, and he got us to do the Monster, which was a riot. It was incredible. Could not believe it, because every night I used to watch this show. In the 60s, it was very, very popular. It's
Right.
still up these days. People, they stop me, goes, "Hey, you know, I saw you on the Monster." Da, da, da. I go, "Oh my God, I can't believe this."
Well, one of the two songs you did was a tune called "Come On, Ringo." Come on,
Yeah.
Aunt Ringo.
Yeah,
So,
come on,
was that a
Ringo.
tune they made you guys play, or did you guys come up with a
Yeah,
song?
okay, we played "Everybody Ringo." It's called "Everybody Ringo." Yeah, and because we kind of dedicated to the Beatles, and we had to do "I Want to Hold Your Hand."
Yeah.
So I had to learn "I Want to Hold Your Hand." I was trying to get the sound of George Harrison.
Yeah.
That was incredible, you know, incredible sound. And but I learned it. It came out pretty good, not bad.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, let's get back to this thing. How did you get on Tower on Capitol Records? Because you talked about being on
Yeah,
Liberty
so
and
then
VJs.
nothing happened with Sonny Bono. Sonny produced us. We did with the Wrecking Crew. We did four songs, and we had Cher was on backup vocals,
Yeah.
and I had Glen Campbell doubled up on guitar, Al Blaine on drums, Carole Kaye on bass. You know, the Wrecking Crew.
Right.
It was unbelievable. And then at the time that I was hanging out with the Rodgers brothers, they were recording with Phil Spector at Studio A, so I got to hang out. I was good friend with Bobby, from the Rodgers brothers. As a matter of fact, we kind of I used to go out with this girl, and then he took over, so we kind of shared the same girl. And then I used to hang out at with Phil Spector, you know, with the strings, and they were doing lost their loving feel, you know. It was awesome at the Wrecking Crew. This was a Gold Star Studio,
So
famous.
those songs that you were doing with the Wrecking Crew, was that for VJ Records?
Yeah, it was for VJ Records. We did Big Boss Man. Big Boss Man, which we did our first, you know, that I wanted to go when I came to America. I saw Dick Clark, American Bandstand, and I was telling my grandma, my aunt, so they cleaned. I go, I want to go to the show. I remember seeing the Everly Brothers. I couldn't believe it. I go, oh my God, I got to go in that show someday. How do I do that? And so that someday came, and there we were. You know, we did a Big Boss Man the first time on America Bandstand, and then we did it like three times with Dirty Water and, you know, the other
Right,
bigger.
right. Well, so the singles on VJ Don't Go Anywhere. What got you on to Tao Records?
So the Tower Records, and then nothing happened. Our manager goes, well, they found this production company guy from the Four Preps. He was like kind of a
Vocal
great
group, right?
musician. And so we went and recorded like in this garage, Dirty Water. He took us there, and it was like a garage. Incredible. That's what we started, the garage sound.
Yeah.
And I never forget, it was so hot, no air conditioning, and we had a great engineer, but his name was Armor Stein, which he recorded George Harrison later on. He became huge. He was a genius, but he got me a great sound on Dirty Water. So we recorded Dirty Water, we put it away, nothing happened, and then we went to Seattle to play a gig for 6 weeks, and then they somehow they took it to Capitol Records, and that Capitol Records Ed Cobb and the Greengrass Production, they signed us for Dirty Water, and so then that's the way he started it.
So the Ed Cobb, so this guy, the Ed Cobb guy, you know, so he produced you guys. He wrote Dirty Water. He also wrote some of the other charting hits. Sometimes Good
Yeah,
Guys
you know
Don't
something.
Cry
We
and Why
all,
Pick on Me.
actually, right. We all wrote Dirty Water. I wrote the riff. Dick Dodd wrote the lyrics at the beginning. I want to tell you a story all about my town. A lot of words and stuff. And they told us, no problem. We're all going to be as the writers. And then they sent us somewhere on tour, which those didn't, somewhere in the South. And then we were in Miami. I remember when the album came out, and I was screaming that my name was not there. And then they screwed us up, and then we ended up suing them. So that's what happened. But
Well, let me
thank
ask
God.
about that. So if Dick came up with the lyrics, so the
Yeah.
song is about Boston. Did he have an experience there?
No, the experience actually was Ed Cobb. He was in Boston.
Okay.
His girlfriend was there. He went to visit her. And the story is that he was trying to visit her, but you know, but it got to be in by 12 o'clock. All the girls, the
Yeah.
dormitory, they'd come in, and he was walking around the River Charles, you know, and he ran across some muggers and thieves, you know. So he wrote that episode of Boston, you know, the story of the main story of the song, the
Right.
lyrics.
Yeah, he got
What a
mugged, is
mission.
my understanding.
Yeah.
And
When
so
he was
he came up
playing,
with the so Cobb did come up with the lyrics for the song.
yeah, when he played it for us, was like a three chord change, like a blues song.
Oh,
And it was
okay.
getting nowhere. That's why we put it on the drawer. And then figured out we're talking. He says, you need some kind of intro. So I went home, and I started trying a bunch of different stuff. And I went back one day with the riff, and I played, and that was it. And then, you know, we did our own version of you know, and Dick Dodd on the drums. You know, we made the song, the music, like incredible.
Oh yeah. I mean, and the riff there is pretty iconic.
Right.
So you kept working with Cobb. What was he like as a producer? Was he pretty hands-on, or did he just kind of let you guys develop?
Yeah, he was pretty good, and mostly us, because we were playing six nights a week.
Yeah.
We were pretty tight. So we recorded like one, two, three, four, go, you know, like the Beatles did, you know, in those days. We recorded all, you know, everybody together, you know, no overdubs, nothing, you know. And then that's the way we recorded. We were pretty tight. So we knew, I started playing my guitar like kind of raunchy sound. As I said, I just did an article on Guitar World magazine, just came out. Big, huge story they did on me. And I was telling them about me starting this fuzz sound by kicking this amp. I was kind of frustrated that it was a cheap Sears amp.
Yeah.
But when I started playing the guitar, I got this crazy kind of sound. I go, I can't believe this. This is kind of cool, you know?
Yeah.
And so I was playing around with the kind of sound. Then when I was in the studio, I was telling, we recorded actually to American Recording with Richie Bartler and Bill Cooper. They were really great. Richie Bartler, incredible. And this after we recorded in the garage in Hollywood, the Dirty Water, we went to American Recording. That's where Three Dog Night, I turned them on.
Right.
American Recording, and he recorded Steppenwolf, all kinds of people, artists. But that's what happened. And yes, then Ed Cobb was, he was pretty cool, actually. Let us do kind of what we wanted to. And between him and Rich Parler, you know, some things that, you know, like they made us redo or overdub this or that, you know.
Yeah.
So, but it was a pretty cool experience.
So Dirty Water, it was, you know, y'all's biggest hit, I think, comes out in 65. It charts like number 11 in Billboard.
Yeah.
Top 10, though, in Cashbox. The other day when we were at lunch, you were telling a story about how you guys would get flown to play Fenway Park, you know, numerous times, and you guys would do that song.
Right.
And you had started telling this story, and the waiter interrupted us, so we didn't get to the end of it. You were saying you were on stage one time, and Peter Tork was next to you, and what happened?
So we were, after we did every year, you know, the Red Sox, after they do the ring ceremony, mm-hmm. when they do the Rally Monday, so we were there in Boston downtown, about 60,000 people. And we were on stage, and I remember the owner of the Red Sox was next to me, and Peter Tork was next to me. So when it was time to start Dirty Water, I started, he came to me, to my guitar neck, and he started like grabbing the tuning peg, and he started kind of pretending or trying to detune my guitar, and I freaked out. So I started Dirty Water. I wasn't sure. I go, oh my God, what is he doing? What are you doing? You're crazy. I gotta play, you know. And thank God that he didn't do it that much, maybe badly, but he was laughing. And I go, you're nuts. He almost screwed my riff, you know. But then it was cool, you know. Come on, Red.
Kind
of slower because
so you're working with Ed Cobb, and he's got, you know, like sometimes good guys do Worldwide, Why Pick on Me. He's pretty good at coming up with tunes that you guys have success with. The last hit that you guys had, it was a hit in Cashbox, Can't Help But Love You, off the Triad album. That one written by Don Bennett and I think Ethan McElroy.
Right.
What do you recall about that tune? Was that stylistically different?
Well, I was kind of devastated because, you know, I wanted to do a punk, you know, I want to continue like with a sound like on Triad or Dirty Water.
Right.
And then all of a sudden, one day, Dick Dodd goes, Oh no, I want to do. He was Ray Charles was his big influence in him,
Yeah.
and he started singing like Ray Charles, and he goes, "I want to do some soul music, you know, da da da." So they brought this to a black artist, and I was there recording this. I was completely devastated because it was completely, you know, a left turn from what we're doing.
Yeah.
And nothing really happened. It was like a disaster with those songs. I mean, it was just like waste. To me, it was a wasting of time, you know.
Well, you mentioned "Try It," and I've always heard that that single was banned, and that you guys were on some Art Linkletter show debating
Oh,
it.
you know about that. Absolutely. Yeah. This idiot from Texas, he owned a lot of radio stations. And
Yeah.
somehow, because we said try it, imagine that in those days, try it. I mean, it could have been try a Coca-Cola, try, you know, this. And because we say try it, he goes, oh, this is suggested lyrics. So he banned the song. And we were devastated because every radio station that played like KRLA, KCJ in town, and all the stations around the United States, it was number one. And so, since he owned about 20 or 30 radio stations, so the word went out that he banned. So everybody pulled it off, and they stopped playing it. And it was completely this guy screwed us completely. And then we went on Art Linkletter show, and we protested it. And we made him feel like an idiot, but he
And he, I mean, you were
still.
debating this, the Texan guy, the radio station
Right.
owner.
Yeah. McLean. His name was McLean, something like that.
So you didn't get a chance to beat him up or anything.
No. I was about to call a couple guys in Chicago, but
Well, so this must have been what a frustrating time. So that Try comes out and it's banned. You do this, you got Dick saying, "Hell, I want to do soul music," which is this
right.
left turn for what you want to do. Pretty frustrating. How, when, what did this have a lot to do with the Standells ending?
Yeah, right after that, Dick just completely became kind of different, weird into that, and he quit the band. He goes, somebody, our production company guys, like Ed Cobb and those guys,
Yeah.
they took him on the side, and he goes, oh man, forget the Standells, we're going to sign you as a solo artist. So that blew us up. We completely destroyed us. We were trying to find somebody to replace him. We ended up replacing him with Lo George from Little Feat. Can you imagine that? It was
Yeah.
incredible. Lo George. He was a
Right.
genius anyway,
Yeah.
but it was not really our kind of music. And he was with us for a while. And then after that, we kind of fell apart. Then Dick Todd put out the album and he sold maybe 10 copies.
Yeah.
That was it, you know. And then they kind of destroyed the Standells. And then we were trying to get me and Larry trying to get different guys in. We tried all kinds of stuff and nothing happened. Then in the 70s, Larry quit. He went, got married. He moved to Utah somewhere. And I took the Standells to Canada. I reformed the band with different guys. And I stayed there for about 3 years, touring in Canada.
Where in Canada?
Like in Vancouver,
Oh, okay.
like Edmonton.
What made you want to go to Canada? What was the reason for
Because
it?
yeah, there was a great booking agent, Mr. Bruce Allen, that I met somebody before a year. And he goes, I can book you guys in there, no problem. And then Bruce Allen, we were playing in Canada, was great. The people go out, they party like crazy. Like these clubs that were awesome. Every night it was packed. And we were playing in this club called Black Bart's, with the hearts, you know, with the two girls, Nancy and the Woodson sisters.
Right.
So at the same time, my guitar player quit while I was there. My keyboard quit when I was there. And so I hired one of the musicians from the Hearts band to substitute the keyboard player for a while.
Uh-huh.
Fill in. And I added this original song and we're rehearsing it. And then now, you know, after a while, you know, we were playing at the same club with the Whistling Sisters. I couldn't believe it. I flipped out almost. I almost fainted when Barracuda came out by Hearts.
Right, Ry Hart, yeah.
And then there's a part in the song on the keyboard that goes, da, 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 da. That was my part in my song. The song bitch stole my part, the keyboard player, and they put it in that song. I could not believe that.
You're going to have to call those guys. And did you call the guys in Chicago to take care of that?
Yeah, really unbelievable. I'm telling you, my life. I made so many people rich.
You're there in Canada for several years to come. And then you came back to the Los Angeles area?
Yeah, then I came back to Los Angeles. And I was tired of traveling. And I opened a restaurant in 94. It was a success, very successful restaurant in Woodland Hills. Near where I am now, and
an Italian restaurant.
Yeah, it was a singing service and all kinds of artists, movie stars. I remember Lisa Marie Presley used to come there, all the Jacksons and Bruce Springfield, a bunch of me. All it was all a lot of musicians. It was a hangout. There were people still up to this day. Sometimes I'm at the Home Depot, somebody recognizes me, go, oh, wow, come, when are you going to open another restaurant? I go, forget about it. I had no idea how hard of work it was.
But you had it for about 10 years or so?
Pardon?
How long did you have the restaurant?
12 years.
12 years, wow.
I got married and got divorced. I got a beautiful daughter. She's 28, Brianna, and... The love of my life, and since that, I went back into music recording every day, and I had several different lot of music, and Rodney Bingenheimer, he always plays my new songs.
Yeah, right. You guys and Rodney are pretty tight. Do you recall when you first met Rodney?
Oh yeah, that was like. Around 1969.
Yeah.
I used to live on the Laurel Canyon, and it was a party house. Everybody used to come there, like Jimi Hendrix, Mamas, and everybody was there. Like, we were marked in red by the police department. All the people used to come there from the Whiskey A Go Go, all the go-go dancers. Everybody was doing Quaaludes, acid. It was just one large party, outgoing party every night. And so I met Rodney and a bunch of people over there. And then that's it from there.
Let me ask you real quick. I wanted to start, kind of timeline here. The restaurant ends, you're getting back into music. So I want to talk about the newer record. But there's something you mentioned the other day, when you talk about Laurel Canyon just now, it's reminded me that there's what's this thing about you and this motorcycle, the connection between this motorcycle you had and the motorcycle that's an Easy Rider?
Yeah, okay. So I had a Triumph, and my roommate Manny had a Triumph. So he painted his tank with the American flag.
Yeah.
And we used to go riding, with Dennis Wilson, and up in the dirt. And we used to hang out with the Charles Manson also. And we used to go to the Spahn Ranch. Yeah, I got stories that it's unbelievable. So one day we were for lunch somewhere in Hollywood. We parked our bikes, somebody saw the motorcycle, and they got the idea of doing the tank for the idea of the Easy Rider, to paint the tank. And they did it. They painted the tank like the American flag.
Your roommate Manny, he was a famous hairdresser or
Hairdresser, yeah.
stylist. Okay,
And
so the new album Dirty Water Revisited. Why are you revisiting Dirty Water? What's the reason to doing this?
Well, the reason I did that is to get back to the record company because they screwed us up with so much money. So, as I said before, when I ate the restaurant, Rick Springfield used to come there all the time. One night he was telling me, he says, I'm re-recording my new album because my record company screwed me up. So after that, I got the idea. I go, I'm going to do that. That's why I re-recorded most of the song on my new on the Dirty Water Revisited. So at least I got the satisfaction of doing my own thing and being in control or whatever, instead of the record companies.
Well, so there are 10 songs on there, and eight of them are tunes that Standells had done originally. What, of course, you guys did more than just eight songs. What criteria? Why pick those particular Standell songs to record? Obviously, "Dirty Water's" the biggest hit. Some of the
Yeah,
others
right.
were
They
hits,
were my
but
favorites. Like "Love Me" was never released. It's a pretty punk song. And "Why Did You Hurt Me?" They were all the songs they were never put out as a singles. They were in the albums. So I figured maybe I get some. I put them out as so people, the new generation, could hear the songs again, like "Try It," So that's why I re-recorded them. Plus, I recorded a couple of original ones in the album, two original ones.
Well, can you tell me some about the backing band you have on the new album? I think it's Gary Caluso on
Yeah, I
bass,
got
Ben
Gary
White
Caruso on
on
bass.
drums.
Yeah, we wrote two songs together with Gary. As a matter of fact, he was here last night. We were rehearsing for this show in Newport Beach on the 21st. So, Gary
Right. Well, the
Caruso.
songs you did with him, are they Vicky and or that he wrote Vicky and "I'm a Sexy Punk Rocker"?
Right, exactly.
How long have you been working with Gary?
I think about like couple two years or so, 2.5 years.
And how did you find Gary?
I found him through, he mixes the sound of this famous club. It's called the Sagebrush Cantina, Calabasas. And so I met him through there, and I go, well, let's get together. Because he used to be signed with EMI. When he would write songs, we are pretty fast. We write songs, he writes lyrics pretty fast. So I feel very comfortable writing songs with him. And as a matter of fact, we're going to work on another original pretty soon. So that's why we figure we'll put him in the, and the, let the kids see. Listen to what I do now, the new kind of punk sound,
Right. What about Dwayne? How do you know Dwayne Wader, the drummer?
And I met him a long time ago in this club. He was a fan of the Standells, and then he became he was very anxious to kind of do some Standell stuff, and so and I needed a drummer singer. And so I recruited him, and he did a great job on singing on drums. Because it's hard to kind of sing like Dick Dodd. He was kind of he had a specific sound in his vocal, Dick Dodd. And so, but he came pretty close to singing very good on that.
Well, one of the songs you redo is the on the new album is a title song for the 1967 movie Riot on Sunset Strip. You wrote
Right.
that tune with John Fleck or Fleckenstein.
Right.
And he was, I know he also played in Love. Can you tell us some about John?
Yeah, it's crazy. So I basically quit while we were recording Triad, I think, at American Recording. And then since John lived on Laurel Canyon and Arthur Lee lived on Laurel Canyon, and we had friends, they suggested, and I was living on Laurel Canyon there with Manny. They suggested that I get out to try John because he was in love with Arthur Lee. And so we auditioned John, and then we hired him. And then one night, after maybe a couple months, I get a call from our manager, and he goes, there's a movie called Riders on the Sunset Strip, and they need a song for the movie, but I need it like by tomorrow. The next day. So me and John, he was so I got an apartment on Poinsettia with John Fleck. And so I said, John, let's write this song. So I started playing the riff on the guitar and putting some lyrics, and we came up with a song, and we delivered like the next day, and that was history. And then we went to the MGM Studios, Culver City, and recorded it like 7 o'clock in the morning. I never forget that. We recorded the version for the movie, and then we recorded it again for the single.
Oh, so it was a, you recorded it a second
Yeah,
time for the single, so it's
two
not the same
times.
recording.
Yes.
And you also appeared in the movie Ride on Sunset Strip.
Right.
Did you do you recall did you see the Chocolate Watch Band in
Oh, sure. We used to hang out. As a matter of fact, I was gonna go on tour with the Chocolate Watch Band like 2 years ago, and then COVID-19 started it, and they fell apart. But we used to hang out, and we were on the set, filming the movie. And I remember there was Mickey Rooney's son and all the hippies. It was Sam Katzman. It was a kind of corny, a trip movie. If you watch now, it's like unbelievable. But it was kind of great in a way. It put us on the map pretty good.
Right. And the Chocolate Watch Band, they were also produced by Ed Cobb.
Yeah, right.
Where was it recently that you say you someplace recently and Bruce Johnston of the Beach Boys came up to you and was asking you about that fine head of hair you still have?
Yeah, right. If we were actually, I was invited to John Stamos' birthday party at the Sagebrush with Gary, and then he goes, the Beach Boys are gonna be there. I go, I guess I come over. So I was sitting there at the table, and they came up, and they did some songs. It was great. It was Mike Love was there, and Bruce Johnson, and another guy. Can't remember his name, but anyway, and John Stamos was on stage with them because he performs with the Beach Boys sometimes. So then I go, God, I sure would like to say hello to Bruce. I haven't seen him in a long time. Last time I saw him was in Canada. And so I was sitting there, all of a sudden, he comes, Bruce. He goes, Tony, I can't believe it. You still got all your hair. That was the funniest thing. I go, oh my God, Bruce, I haven't seen you a long time. So we start talking about the old days. And he says, hey, Tony, I wrote that song. I make the young girls cry. I go, you did? I had no idea. That Barry Manilow song. Oh my God, I had no idea that he wrote that. And he goes, I'm also producing The Weeknd. So it was really nice. We started took some nice pictures, and we started chatting about Dennis Wilson. I told him that we used to hang out. He knew about it. I used to hang out with the Beach Boys, with Brian Bryant, and at this at the famous mama. She was a Jewish lady with two daughters, which Bryant married one of them.
Yeah.
She married Marilyn, I believe, yeah. With the Gary Leeds. We used to hang out there. And so I was, and we actually ended up going on the scooters to the house of the Beach Boys at the beach somewhere in Newport Beach, Orange County, somewhere. So we became pretty good friends.
So you had mentioned this, you were talking a few months ago, living in Oral Canyon, it being pretty crazy time. And you also touched on hanging out with Dennis Wilson. And then when you were with Dennis, you met Charlie Manson a couple of times too. He was hanging out with you guys.
So we used to, Dennis Wilson rented a house on Sunset Plaza off Sunset Boulevard by La Cienega. And it was about the fourth house up. And so me and Manny and Dennis, we used to ride the skateboard. And so we used to go there and ride skateboards. And Charles Manson, he used to come there with his guitar and sit on the sidewalk and play his songs. And he wanted him to listen, us to listen. And the three girls, they were on the steps. And Charles used to go, "Hey, guys, anything you need, just go ask the girls." And so he used to play songs. He wanted more attention. As a matter of fact, on the movie Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, there was a part where, what's his name, the producer, Doris Day's son.
Terry Melcher.
Yeah. He was supposed to go to listen to these songs at the Spahn Ranch.
Yeah.
So me, Manny, and Dennis, we went there with the motorcycles to bring him the news that, because before Terry didn't want to go.
Yeah.
And we brought the news that Terry, after all, was going to go. So he was really excited. And then, we hung out there and he goes, "Yeah, you guys, anything you need again? There's all the girls here." And it was kind of spooky. And so finally we got out of there. And but there was one of that scene in the movie that we were involved with, me, Manny, and Dennis.
Yeah, going out to the Spahn Ranch and getting creepy feeling from it being out there.
Oh, God, yes.
Well, you had a record in 2020 called A Suitcase Full of Dreams, living on Laurel Canyon.
Right.
Does that album sort of speak to those experiences, those party time experiences you had living
exactly.
there?
Actually, I wrote a song. It's called Living on Laurel Canyon. And it's in the album, and I love it. I mean, a lot of people really liked it. I described the whole scenery, all the people who used to come in there in the house, because Manny used to cut, like, Linda Ronstadt, his hair, so her hair. So she used to hang out there, crash on the couch. People used to come and crash there all the time. And then, Davy Jones, he used to come there all the time. As a matter of fact, one day he goes, "Hey, Tony, look, I had a Jag XKE." And he goes, "Hey, you Jaggies, forget about, I just got a Mini Cooper. I'm going to take you for a ride." So I got in and we went up on Mulholland. Oh my God, he almost killed me. I mean, we were doing curves on two wheels. Just, it was like crazy. I went back like I was completely, my face was yellow. And he goes, "Tony, how did I scare you?" "I scare me. He almost killed me." That was crazy. But he was the nicest guy, Davey.
Yeah.
Got his hair.
Well, so you mentioned you've got this gig coming up on the 21st. Is that right?
Yeah.
December 21st.
And the Poor Man, yeah.
What's the name of the restaurant again?
It's called Original Pizza. And it's a golf course in Newport Beach.
And Newport Beach. Okay, so we can take a listen to right now one of the tracks off of Dirty Water Revisited. And it's out of the several Standale songs you co-wrote, I'd like to hear it. It's Why Did You Hurt Me? And this is one you wrote with Dick Dodd. Do you recall how that song came together?
I was going with this girl at the time. I was madly in love. And I go, God, I want to write her a song. And I go to Dick, I go, I need some help on lyrics. I can't just finish the lyrics. And so I had the music. As a matter of fact, I'm telling you right now, the same chords that I play in that song, the Beatles did a song that were the same chords. La, 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 la. But it's the Beatles did it. And
Yeah.
the same chords exactly. I couldn't believe it. And so we finished the song because our manager and they go, we need songs for the album. So we finished it and then we recorded.
Excellent. Oh, when did you tour with the Rolling Stones?
That was in 66, late 66.
And that was a national tour.
A national tour of 35 cities.
So how was it keeping up with those guys?
Oh my God, it was insane. Every night was a trip on the plane. One night we almost all died. They started a fire. There was a card game, cards, and there was a huge amount of money. And Keith Richards got mad. He put out all the cards in a pile and he lit a fire. And the captain came out and says, "You guys are crazy. I'm going to land the plane in the desert. I don't care." He goes, "I don't want to die." And then we were in Texas, and Brian Jones, it was so humid that day. I remember just got off of the stage and I was soaked.
Yeah.
And then so the Rolling Stones came on, and about 15 minutes and on the show, in the show, Brian Jones when I wiped his face with the American flag, and that was it. We almost got killed. There was Marines in the audience. Everybody started going crazy, rushing the stage, and they had escorted us in the back of the stage and the limousines and got out of there. We almost got killed. It was like every day was
Whoa.
something, you
And
know.
that was in Texas?
Yeah, I was in Texas, Houston, exactly.
Wow. Tony, let me thank you again so much for talking with me today on our Coolest Conversations.
Oh yeah, I like to say hello and thank Little Stevens. He is really incredible what he's done to support us musicians through the years with his show. He's really a genius.
Well, we're going to give a listen now to your recent version of Why Did You Hurt Me? It's Tony Valentino off Dirty Water Revisited in Little Steven's Underground Garage. Valentino, that was Why Did You Hurt Me off his latest album Dirty Water Revisited, and that's available from our friends over at Big Stir Records. The song was written by Tony along with the late Dick Dodd. This is the Mighty Manfred, and thanks again to Tony for speaking with me today. Thanks also to Sammy Semenza for producing our podcast. Plainfield, New Jersey is home to the New Bardos, and their latest seasonal single is a version of the band's song Christmas Must Be Tonight. We'll find out all about it and them next time around on your Coolest Conversations podcast, presented by Hard Rock in Little Steven's Underground Garage.
Choice, baby. Yeah, but I'm a man. I don't even live with baby. Buddy, you're a boy. Make a big noise playing in the street. I'm gonna be a big man someday. You got mud on your face, you big disgrace. Kicking your can all over the place.
Some things are better when they rock. The Seminole Hard Rock Hotels and Casinos rock around the clock with nonstop casino action, rooms fit for the king, pools, spas, restaurants, and clubs for every taste and temptation. Seminole Hard Rock Hotel and Casino in Tampa or Hollywood, Florida. We will rock you.